My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. I met Mark when his brother Alan came to speak at this meeting, and tonight I met his beautiful wife. And something about being sober and staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me to grow a huge heart and be open to new friends. And so I'm so excited to hear Mark's story tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Mark Siegel, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to come out. The weather is not all okay. Thank you, sir. The weather's not all that good tonight, and it's your true devotion to come out when the weather's questionable, because I know how I used to be when the weather was questionable, and when I was out there, nothing stopped me. My sobriety date is January 26, 1988. My home group is the Triangle Men's Club 9 o'clock Saturday morning meeting. I have a sponsor. I sponsor people. And today I'm teachable. And because you guys have taught me what needs to be done, which includes sharing my experience, strength, and hope, which is what I intend to do tonight. So before I start telling my story, I'd like to just read two things. Bear with me. One of them came because I love this when Tim sent me an email, and it's just a fact, which, I mean, you've all probably heard it, read it with a sponsor, read it yourself, but it is a fact. The explanation in alcoholism was a disease of twofold nature, an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind, cleared up a number of puzzling questions for me. The allergy we could do nothing about. Somehow our bodies had reacted to the point where we could no longer absorb alcohol in our systems. The why is not important. The fact is that one drink will set up a reaction in our system which requires more. The one drink was too much, and 100 drinks were never enough. That is a definite fact. So, and then one other thing I want to read before I get into my story. At my home group on Saturday, I was blessed to lead the discussion when my good friend Eric picked up a 38-year chip. Another blessing. Congratulations, Eric. Another blessing of sobriety. I love gratitude meetings. I was talking to Eric today, and he said, we're going to have a gratitude meeting tonight. I said, it's going to be gratitude because I'm grateful. I mean, there's no question about it. I said, I'll be telling my story, and being that I, at this point, have 35 and a half years, more of my life has been in sobriety than in my using days. So when we share our experience, strength, and hope, as we talk about, and talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Well, what it's like now not only is more important to me, but it's more of my life. I don't want to forget where I came from. We talk about that all the time. So if I keep that fresh and know that I could be back there if I don't do the right thing, then it'll just help me keep doing the right thing. So I will begin to tell my story in a minute. I just want to read this one other thing. And I read in my morning meditation, when I do some praying and meditating, I like to read the daily reflections in the 24 hours a day. And today's daily reflections basically it talks about gratitude and talks about how I'm fortunate enough to be here. It says, it's a design for living. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or, if you prefer, a design for living that really works. I try each day to raise my heart and hands in thanks to God for showing me a design for living that really works through our beautiful fellowship. But what exactly is a design for living that really works? For me, it is the practice of the 12 steps to the best of my ability, the continued awareness of God who loves me unconditionally, and the hope that in each new day there is a purpose for my being. I am truly, truly blessed in the fellowship. That's what gratitude is all about. So as the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, now for my story. So, I had my first drink at the very old, ripe, early age of 5 years old. I should say, not only first drink, may not have been my first drink, because I'm a member of the Jewish faith, and on Friday night when we have, if we had Shabbat, we probably took a little sip of wine when we were saying the blessing. But I had my first drunk when I was 5 years old, and my brother, who, by the grace of God, is sober and here with us today, he was there, my sister. We were living in an apartment complex not far from here, off of East Rock Springs on Marquand Drive in some apartments. And we were in the backyard having a barbecue, and my father asked my mom to fix him a Scotch on the Rocks. Now, of course, if my story's wrong, I have my brother to correct me, and he'll correct me. Of course he will. Anyway, so as I recall, or as I've been told, because I certainly don't recall, so my mom fixed him the Scotch on the Rocks, and she put it down the table. He was barbecuing. We were running around playing tag, whatever kids do. And Alan ran by and took a piece of ice out of the glass because he was thirsty. I ran by, and I saw what he did. I picked up the glass, and I chugged, loved it. So I was told a little while later, everyone's looking around, where's Mark? What happened to Mark? Nobody knew where I was, and they finally found me, again, as I was told, up on the living room floor, totally passed out. Well, the good news is, at the time, he later became an EENT in Atlanta, a doctor, and he was my eyes, ears, nose, and throat doctor, and family later on in life. He was in the Navy, and he was doing his internship, I believe it was at Grady, I don't know where, but he lived across the hall from us, so they ran over there to get him to find out what was wrong with Mark. And as soon as he bent down over me, he started going, this boy is drunk, we got to get him to the hospital and pump his stomach. So the real interesting part of the story, I guess if we ever went back and found the records, truth be known, I wasn't the one that got drunk. Because what I was told is when they rushed me to the hospital and they pumped my stomach and they were asking my father for my name, he said, Alan Siegel. So Alan was drunk, not me. I just suffered the consequences. My first drink, my first drunk. Well, I was probably off to the races, but it was a few years later before I guess things really started to get out of hand. And so there's, I guess, like I said, I use substances that affect me from the neck up, as Eric likes to say, but I use them alcoholically. Because being that I had a hole in the soul and didn't know how to fix it, which now today I do know how, if things weren't right or things were good, you know, let's party. Let's have a good time. Let's get in trouble. My parents were on vacation and in Florida, and there was a concert. It used to be called the Municipal Auditorium down on where Georgia State is by Heard Park. And somebody that Alan knew, see, I'm going to blame Alan because I can blame him for a lot. Somebody that knew Alan, he's 5 years older, so I had a good teacher. Somebody that knew Alan knew that his parents or heard his parents were out of town and used, they used to be called what, mimeographs, you know, copy machines where you put the paper in and you crank them through and the purple, that one was doing the copying, and passed out directions from the auditorium to my parents' house because we were going to have a party. Well, the party was definitely a party. It was out of hand. Without mentioning names, there were some rather famous, I don't know how famous they were at the time, but obviously I was about 14 or 15 then, so I'm going to be, oh, that's another thing to be grateful for. I'll drop this in. A week from tomorrow night will be my belly button birthday, and I'll be 69. So that we're going back 55 years there about when this party took place, and it was probably the first time where I learned how to really get out of hand. And because we had aunt and uncle lived across the street, and they were supposed to be watching the house, and they came over, wanted to know what was going on, and I don't know how many hundreds of people were there, but there was lots of people there, and it was a rather crazy party, and that's when I really learned about being outer space, because I was out of space. I didn't go to school for, I don't know, a week or two. My sister forged my mom's name and said that I had mononucleosis as my excuse why I didn't go to school. So, you know, crazy behavior started at an early age. Somebody else that you guys know that frequents here a lot, we were talking with Lisa before the meeting, a fellow named, I'll mention his first name, Harry B., who's been here. He lives now in South Florida. He and I are the same age. He's like two weeks older than me, and we grew up together, and we ran the streets pretty good here in Atlanta, and we used to get into a lot of mischief together. I used to say, since I've been sober, that if the police department or the judges ever went back and looked at my records for the DUIs that I bought my way out of, or DUIDs, or whatever, I mean, they'd probably take my license away and say, you don't deserve and you don't have the right to drive. But, you know, I'm 35 and a half years sober now, and I lead a good life, and I want to believe that I help a lot of people and I do a lot of the right things. So, Aaron and I used to get in a lot of trouble together, and then we don't want to make this a drunk log. Everyone has their drunk logs and has their using stories, and, you know, all we need to do is change our name. You know, you got the same story, just put your name in it. So to tell you what happened, because it was just that kind of behavior. I mean, you know, we dealt substances, and we had a guy rip us off. We actually took my father's gun, and we were riding down the road with guns waving out a window like we were going to catch the guy and do something. Is that insane? Is that insane? Of course it's insane. We do insane things. You know, so like I said, what was it like? I mean, I could just go on, but, you know, I don't want to forget that stuff, but I want to talk about what happened and what it's like now, what it's like been for the last 35 and a half years. So it's interesting. What really happened was, was still using pretty heavy. Alan, my parents had made the geographic cure for Alan, sent him to Israel, hoping that he could get his life squared up. My family went there for his wedding. He got married. Well, he stayed there 5 years. They went to the wedding, and I stayed back to run our business. We had a family business. And then, after the family came back, after a period of time, my father wanted to take me there and meet Alan's family and see where he lived. And it was a Friday afternoon, and my mom had just made the arrangements for our air flare for my father and I to go on Monday morning. And she was calling for him and didn't hear him. She went in their bedroom and found him laying on the floor. He had had a heart attack. Fast forward through that, the doctor said he was never in any shape to go, and it, you know, bad things could have happened on the plane or to us over there, and we would have had to deal with it. But so left-handedly, it was kind of a blessing rather than have something happen while we were over there. Alan came back for the funeral, and I went back to Israel with him, and I stayed 6 weeks because I was running pretty heavy and getting out of hand, and I was going to go, you know, see what it was like there. And I liked it so much, I said to my mom, I think I could do this. So I came back, I closed up my apartment. I had been married. I like to say it was a drug marriage because we were both way out of it. And I had shortly been divorced from that first marriage before all this occurred. So I was living in an apartment, and Alan came back. We had the funeral, and we sat shiva. That's what it's called, where you sit mourning the, you know, you sit and mourn the passing of the loved one. And I went back to Israel with him, stayed 6 weeks, liked it, came back, closed up my apartment, and went there for 2 years. Now, I was there for 2 years, and I was, let's say, physically I was very healthy, but obviously mentally I wasn't. I did a lot of drinking of beer and arak. That's like very high proof alcohol, and did a lot of smoking of hash because they had hash there. And but I was physically in good shape. But what really, this is why I want, this is what happened. We're coming to what happened. So after being there 2 years, and I knew that I was coming back, I was already romancing 30 days before I came back about what I was going to do when I got back to Atlanta about the old behavior. So we came back, and Alan actually came back with me. We went through Europe, went to Amsterdam, we went to Europe, to England, and then we came back, and then Alan stayed a while, and he wound up going back, and I kept myself for about 30, maybe 40 days, just thinking about not doing it. And of course, being a disease of the mind, and I had no control, I said, okay, and off the race I was. That was like in March of 87, so in less than 10 months, because as I said, my sobriety date was January of the next year, those 10 months were an ugly 10 months. It was an ugly 10 months. And I made an appointment with my doctor just to see what kind of shape I was in. I wanted to go to the doctor and see how bad my health was. And I drove in the car there. I smoked a half a joint on the way with complete intention of finishing that joint when I left the doctor's office. That was my plan. I got into the doctor's office, and he did the physical. And after we established how bad a health I was in, he marched me across, I don't know how many here are from Atlanta, I'm born and raised here. West Paces Ferry Hospital used to be up on Howell Mill Road, Northside Drive. It's no longer there now, but it was there. And his office was in the professional building. He marched me through the tunnel into the West Paces Ferry Treatment Center. I must have been ready because I didn't fight him. I could have said, no, I'm not going. I mean, you know, he couldn't force me. You know, I was 33 years old, but I didn't argue. I went willingly. So, you know, my higher power obviously had a plan for me, and I didn't fight it. I went. I was inpatient for 2 weeks, and then I came out, and they told me when I was there, if you keep doing things the same way and expect different results, that's the pure definition of insanity. You need to try something else. And though my mom was a loving mom, she was the great enabler. Because, you know, my father would fix my legal problems. Mom would take care of us. I mean, that's, you know, just a typical thing. So they said, if you want to get better now that you've had 2 weeks of treatment, you should consider going to a halfway house instead of back to your mom's house. Because I was working in the family business at the time. We were in the auto parts business. My mom was thinking about selling the business because, you know, her husband was gone, her kids were running rampant, and she didn't have the strength or nor the ability to try and run the business, so she was thinking about selling it. Anyway, I came out of treatment. I called a dear friend of mine who I grew up with here in Atlanta, and I said to him, they recommend that I go to a halfway house, and it's going to be $1,000 for 3 months. And I didn't. They told me I shouldn't take the money from my mom, and I asked him. He said, who'd I write the check, and how much is it? He said, and I said, wow, I'd appreciate it. And I told him, and he did, and I said, I will pay you back when I get back on my feet. He says, my payback, when you get your life in order, I will feel like I've been paid back. The good news is, obviously, it's part of my story. Eventually, I did that. I stayed there for 3 months, and I was on the road to recovery early on back then, and I eventually paid him back, which he didn't need, but as I was told, it was the right thing to do, and when I had money in my pocket, I made the payback. So now, here I am, early in sobriety, living at my mom's, have the family business, she's thinking about selling it, Alan's now come back, and he decided to start carrying on a little bit again himself. I had said to my mom, instead of selling the business, I said, I have my head on straight. I really think I can make a go of this, and we can, you know, make this business happen and not have to close it, sell it, or lose it. During the time, of course, I had met Karen. Karen, that's another great thing about this program, in sobriety and gratitude. I met Karen, we were going to the same meeting. Obviously the rest is history, but, you know, we started having a relationship. We both were over a year sober, and we eventually got married, which is another interesting story of itself, which I'll tell a little bit about that. Anyway, I remember the day that Karen and I sat down with my mom and said, we've got to tough love Alan, and we got to explain to him that we can't keep taking care of him if he wants to get his head on right. And we basically, that's the short version, and something must have clicked, because Alan, and just to get back, so growing up, when Alan had the problem and I didn't, we used to go to family therapy, and I would be stoned out of my mind because I didn't have a problem, just Alan did, right? So, you know, we tried, they tried, the family tried, but he had the problem, not me. Obviously, we both had the problem. It's in the genes. But something woke up in him. So that's something else to be grateful for. And he traveled his road to sobriety, and here he sits today. It's just like I stand. So he got his life in order. My mom wanted out of the business. We worked hard, started to build a pretty good business. We bought her out. And then without going into hard details, it wasn't working for me. Maybe it was working for him. Not important to this day. But I eventually bought him out, and it became very difficult for our relationship. We basically lost our relationship. He went on his way. I continued to run the business. But look at that. Here we are many years later, full circle. We have a relationship today. Recovery, sobriety has given us that gift of bringing our relationship back together. Gratitude. So now a little bit about mine and Karen's early romance. We moved in together. We were planning a wedding, and we were going to have just a little small wedding, not with a lot of people. But then our families, my father obviously had passed away. That was in 85. Her parents were still alive. My mom was still alive. My sister got involved. Everybody started getting involved. It became very stressful for us. We had invitations out. We actually had some presents that were sent to us, and we were getting married at the end of the year. And 30 days before the wedding, I said to Karen, I can't do this. This is crazy. And she looked me right in the eyes. She said, I'm committed to this relationship, and I'm okay with that if we get into therapy tomorrow and work on the relationship and find out if this is the right thing for us or not. And I said, I know that I'm in love with you and I want this to work. We were in therapy. That was at the first of that year. And again, I'll mention this. Another thing to be grateful for, today is Monday, August the 7th. 3 days ago, Friday, August the 4th, my beautiful bride and I celebrated 33 years of marriage. So that was early on that year, 8 months later after being in therapy and working on ourselves, we called our family and said, we're getting married in the rabbi study on Saturday night. If you want to join us, come. We had 10 or 12 people, and that was it. The money that we had saved, so we got married August 4th. The next month, September, we bought our house that we're still in. We've been in our house the same 33 years that we've been married, which is really just right around the corner from here. She makes fun of me because I live my whole life in about a 3 to 4 mile radius. We grew up in I told you the apartment we lived in was on off East Rock Springs on Mark Ann Drive. Then my parents bought a house off of Briarcliff Road, right across from what used to be the crazy house. The CAB addiction clinic was there, and Georgia Mental Health Hospital was right there at Briarcliff and North Decatur, and we lived on a street right across from there. So I could have been. They knew what they were doing. Absolutely right. So So we live there, and now Karen and I live right over here off of North Druid Hills, close to the Target. And we lived in an apartment first where we bought our house, which was off of East Rock Springs and Marquand Drive, close where the apartment was that I grew up in. So other than the 2 years that I lived in Israel, I've lived my whole life in about a 3 or 4 mile radius. I love Atlanta. I like to say I'm a Georgia peach, and I want to say that I'm blessed to have northern mentality and southern hospitality, because my parents are from up north, and I'm born and raised here. So, you know, we're talking about what it's like now. This is the wonderful and the beauty of sobriety, the gifts that I've been given. So, along the way, we had, Karen and I wanted to have family. We got married, obviously, late in life. We wanted to have kids. So we immediately tried to have kids, and we went to the doctor, and we had fertility problems. But thanks God to medical science that we were blessed through in vitro fertilization with the one gorgeous daughter that we have. It's a child who's never seen either one of us altered. She's seen us fight. We're human. She's seen us have arguments. She knows that. But she hasn't seen that either one of us altered from the head up because of anything we may have done. Another blessing. True gratitude. That's what sobriety has given me. So we had talked about possibly adopting, and I said I would be open to it because we actually went to a Georgia adoption agency. I would be open to it, but I'd love to have a child of my own if possible. So we tried and took 5 in vitros, but then we were fortunate enough to be blessed with her. The scary part was they put in 3 eggs. We had 3 heartbeats. Then we went back to be checked. It was down to 2. Then we went back a few days later to be checked again because they checked her HGC levels, and we were down to 1. Of course, we were getting nervous, but talking about history now, we were blessed and had the child. And then we wanted another one, so we tried it again. Meantime, Alan had gotten married, and he had a daughter. Our daughter Miranda has his daughter Mara. They're cousins. They're about a year apart. And his wife at the time, they lived over there off of Henderson Mill Road, and we left Miranda with them, or with Lee, that was his wife's name, and their daughter, so we could go to the hospital because we had done another in vitro, and we were pregnant, we thought. But it didn't hold, it didn't work, and it was very devastating. I mean, I'm the husband, the dad, and obviously it was devastating to me, but can imagine what my wife, the woman, was going through, and it was very tough. But I remember when we finally left the facility, I hugged Karen, I said, you know, Karen, God has a plan. We just need to be grateful that we're blessed with Miranda, and we're just supposed to only have one child. Maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. And we went on from there, and we've raised our daughter. She's a successful attorney here in Atlanta, been practicing 2.5 years. I know I'm extremely proud, and I know I can speak for my wife. She's extremely proud, too. We really believe we've got a good kid. She's probably got isms because she's got 2 parents that are in recovery. So, but we did manage to raise her to this point. She'll be 29 in November and have a good kid at this point. So I just pray it continues. But, you know, I'm not in that business. I have no control over that. But if we do the footwork and we do the right things and we're good, shining examples, which I believe we've been, I think we've done a good job and we're seeing the results. So, again, gratitude. So you asked if it was going to be a gratitude meeting, Eric, and I told you it would be. Because, like I said, being sober as long as I am, it's more about what it's like now. So that's the blessings that sobriety gives to us. It's given me, but it gives to us if we do the work. You get a sponsor. First, you got to surrender. You got to surrender and get off that elevator and admit to yourself that it's gone as low as I want it to go, and then be willing to do the work. It's really an easy program for complicated people, and we want to make a big deal out of it, but it says it right in how it works, what you need to do. And, you know, if we want to make a big deal out of it, maybe it won't work. But if we follow the directions that's in the first 164 pages, and we go to meetings, and we get a sponsor, and we work the steps, and then, as I said, the 12th step, you give it back by working with others, and you go to meetings, and you have sponsees, you get to work the steps again as you're taking them through the book. And if you have an issue, that's why you have a sponsor. You don't have to work the steps one time only. You know, I've heard it said many times that the only step we know that we do perfectly is the first step. The rest, we're constantly doing them to the best of our ability. And if we ask for help, somebody will give us directions. I've always told Karen that one of my favorite sayings that I've told her is that our higher power has not brought us this far to throw us off the cliff. Now, that doesn't mean that I can just sit on my laurels and do nothing. I've got to do the footwork. If I do the footwork and do the next right thing, then good things are going to happen. Everything's going to work out okay. May not be the way I want it. May not be the way I planned it. But it's going to work out like it's supposed to, and it is probably going to be okay. So now, in this much time in sobriety, the surface work I do is I go to more meetings now than I did. When I first started, I was one of those 90 and 90s like we were told and people tell us to do, and I did that. And who knows, I may have done 365 in the first 365. But I do know as time went on, you know, I'd go to anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 meetings a week. But now, today, I go to my men's meeting on Saturday morning. I go to, there's a 9:30 meeting that's a mixed meeting on Sunday morning. On Tuesday night, I get together with a group of guys, and we catch a dinner somewhere in the area, and then go downstairs at Triangle and do a big book study. On Sunday evening at 5 o'clock, my wife and I, about, I think it's 5 years now, isn't it? Four and a half, yeah. We started a meeting, I don't know if you've heard it or seen it, in the directory's schedule. It's called the Beltline Meeting. It's at the In-Town Chabad right by Pond City Market. You look out of glass windows and the Beltline's right there. It's 5 o'clock on Sunday meeting. We started, Karen and I and another 5, 6, 7 people, and that's all it was, week after week after week. And here it is 4 and a half years later, and we've had 70 people at the meeting sometimes. I mean, it's really grown, and it's such a great, diverse group of people. If you're looking for a meeting on a Sunday afternoon, if you're in the Midtown area, it's in the book, you can get it. The address, 730 Ponce de Leon Avenue, but you can find it. Certainly, you're welcome to be there. So, surface work. Ponce de Leon Place. Okay, thank you. Still likes to correct me. So I do 5 meetings a week or more. Today at 5 o'clock, I met with a sponsee from 5 to about 6:15 before I went home and had dinner and come to share my story with you guys, which I certainly do appreciate you coming out to be part of the evening with me. So here's what my life is literally today. So I had my own business for those years after Alan and I together built it. Then I bought them out and I had it. And in 2010, which is 13 years ago, I sold it. And the people that I sold it to, I went to work for them. They eventually were bought out. And 3 years ago, we found a parting of the ways. I won't say that I was, we found a parting of the ways. We'll leave it at that. So I retired. I figured, okay, it's a good time to retire. It was COVID. We were in COVID. It was 2020. So at the end of 2020. So what did I first immediately do? I didn't do anything because I kind of liked sitting around. And I said, no, I don't like sitting around. So I started looking online, Indeed, all the whatevers. And I couldn't find what was clicking. I talked to my sponsor who put me with people, and I started talking. And they said, at this stage of your life, because the people that bought my business, they rent the building that we had bought that I ran my business out of, so that gives us some income and a little bit of a comfort zone. So I didn't need to have a high-powered job, but for my sanity, and I highly recommend that anybody, if you get to the point where you're ready to retire, I know I would slip off and I did nothing. Even though I do a lot of service work, I sponsor people, I go to a lot of meetings, I just, and I also go to the gym. That's part of the story here at the end. So my sponsor said, we need to find you a job that you'll really like and then you'll enjoy. I don't know that you need to be in that corporate world anymore. And he knew someone, and I don't mind sharing this, if you're ever in the area, come in and see me. He knew someone from a business relationship that owns a couple of Ace Hardware stores, and one of them is the one in Midtown at Juniper and 7th called Chef's Midtown Ace Hardware. I went out and sat down and talked with the guy for an hour and a half, and after we talked about it and I told him who I was, and what I was looking for, he says, I know you'll do a great job for me. I'm going to hire you. And I work for him. Same schedule. It's now been 2 years. Literally this month, August 2 years ago, right on my birthday. 3 days a week, 6 hours a day. I leave there at 2 o'clock. Where do I go? I go to the gym. I like to swim. I'm a swimmer. So I worked, left at 2, went to the gym, swam for an hour, took a shower, went and saw my dogs, went over to Triangle, met with a sponsee, came home, had dinner, and now I'm here. What kind of gratitude? I mean, I couldn't ask for a better life than that. You know how you've had people say to you that if you made a list of things that you want, and I don't mean things, because I have things too, but I'm talking about made a list of things that you would like to have in a loving, kind, enjoyable way, not cars or houses or toys, we would always sell ourselves short. My life is beyond my wildest dreams of how good it is now. We travel a little. We enjoy a lot of time together. Karen has a part-time work. I have part-time work. Our daughter's doing well. I work a little. I work out a little bit. And my life is good. You know why? Right there on the wall. Right there on the wall. Because that day when my doctor said, I think we need to march you into the treatment center that you're not in too good a shape, I surrendered. I surrendered. I didn't necessarily have to surrender, but I did. And now, this many years later, my life is full. I lead a full life by all means. And it's by the grace of God. And it's this program. And everything that I talked about and then we talk about when we read how it works, that I've been given all these blessings. And so to answer your question, Eric, was this a gratitude meeting? I think it was a gratitude meeting because thanks to you and Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps and all the things that we can do, I've been given an abundant life. And what else can I say besides thank you guys for showing up. Thank you guys for being here and letting me be a little part of your life, and hopefully what I said can share some information for you guys to go out and do the right thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That was so awesome.
And enthusiastic. And I've asked Alan to come give out the chips.
Hey, everybody. My name is Alan Siegel. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, Alan.
I've been necessary to take a drink. It was October 17, 1983. That's almost 34 years. That's a big deal to me.
Yeah, it is a big deal.
Came here this Thursday night. Men's meeting was my home group. Got sober. I had three sponsors. Married all three of them. Met Tim and Tim. And a bunch of people here and I still have relationships with. But I am grateful. Thank you for telling your story. Fat chicken, as we said Thursday night men's meeting, it was adequate. Okay. We'll correct you later. But you were close. Anyway, again, in AA we have a chip system. And anybody want to try our way of life or the life they live in, we have a white chip. Anybody want a white chip? I'll leave it here for after the meeting. Anyway, we have a 30-day chip. So, everybody. We have a 60-day chip, and we have 60 days. We have a red chip from that. I know what a 90-day chip is. Believe me. Hard chip to get. 90 days in a row, and there's nothing. Anything, it's like, stop drinking. Anybody have 90 days? Okay, we have a yellow chip. There's nothing yellow about a yellow chip. That is 6 months. Anybody have 6 months? agreement. We have a blue chip. That's what's a blue chip speaker meeting for a year or multiples. Anybody have a year or multiples?
My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
August
5th,
1985. All right. Okay. Thanks for a great meeting. I think it was a suggestion, not a question. But, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. It's the only thing I've ever done consistently. And I really haven't done it. I've just shown up. It's really because of God and the men and Alcoholics Anonymous and some of the women. I was, to some, a dire warning when I got sober. Like to think that God and the steps and the company that I keep has turned me into a useful power of example. And just so you know, I was homeless, living in Central Park at my bottom. I had trouble remembering my last drunk because I was in a haze. I remember being picked up at a motel in North White Plains, and I had been drinking the night before, but those last days out, I was last, lost, and least. So for a guy who walked into the rooms having conversations with, the voices in my head, and to be here today, I can tell you, this really does work. So please keep coming back.
Sleep, it'll never leave if I can.